Thanks a lot. So today I will be talking on models of reionization and coupled with thermal history and ionization history of the universe. So the model I'm going to present today will be semi-analytical. So it will be somewhat idealized and we'll be employing approximation at certain levels. But as we will see that when we confront these models with available observational constraints, we seem to get a reasonable good picture of how the reionization proceeded, occurred throughout the universe. Both before the overlap phase and after. And I will talk about these in detail as I go along. So, the pointer, maybe I can use this, yeah. So, just to summarize the plan of my talk, so I will present the background of this work basically, why we are motivated to do such a thing. And then I will try to develop the formalism in slight details. So, I will start with some simple reionization models. Then try to make them more complicated, employing the inhomogeneity in the intergalactic medium. And then I will go into self-consistent models, which we are trying to develop right now. After that, I will present the results and possibly some idea about what we are going to do in future. So just the motivation, why we are into this. So there seems to be an apparent discrepancy between the Gunn-Peterson optical depth as measured around redshift of 6 and the first year WMAP results. The apparent discrepancies, by this I mean that the Gunn-Peterson optical depth seems to imply that the universe was quite neutral around such redshifts, while from the first year WMAP results, we seem to get a high electron scattering optical depth, which kind of implies that the reionization occurred much earlier. And so we need to look into this slightly more carefully. On the other side, there is another thing which I wanted to mention, that we seem to find some excess in the cosmic near-infrared background observations. And they seem to be quite well explained by early population of population 3 stars at redshifts greater than 9 or so. So in this work, we will try to see what effect do these population 3 stars, along with the other sources, have on the reionization and thermal history of the universe. And as is clear, to model the reionization, you have to deal with wide variety of spatial scales. If you want to do a full numerical simulation, you really need a high dynamic range, which is somewhat beyond reach currently. So the goal is to develop semi-analytical models with as much as essential physics we can incorporate in them, and then try to see what they imply when we confront them with the observations. So, as I said, I will start with simple models of reionization. So, the most simplest thing one can do is to study the evolution of the volume-philic factor of ionized regions, which is given by these equations. So, I will be considering hydrogen only. You can do everything with helium-2, helium-3 also. But for simplicity, I will be concentrating on hydrogen, so H2 regions basically. So, the evolution is given by a source term, which is given by the rate of ionizing photons per unit volume, minus the recombination term. In the recombination term, you have to incorporate the clumpiness of the IgM in some way, which is incorporated as a clumping factor, basically. So the things I have denoted in red colors are the most uncertain things in these kinds of modeling. The sources, we don't know, we don't really know what the sources are, especially at high redshifts. And we have very little idea about the clumping factor. To see how these uncertainties affect, you can see a plot given by Barkana and Loeb, where they plot this volume filling factor as a function of redshift. And this is for different clumping factor. For the sources, they assume that it is proportional to the collapse fraction, mass collapse fraction in the universe. And these are for, this red curves are for different values of clumping factor, starting from 30 to 0. So, yeah, you can see that the reionization history can vary quite a lot depending on what the value of clumping factor can be. And similar uncertainties can arise due to sources also. Coupled with this, we should be able to study the evolution of the temperature also, which is kind of given by this temperature evolution equation, where I have included the terms with adiabatic cooling and the net heating rate per baryon. So the net heating rate, most cases it is sufficient to include the photoheating from the ionizing radiation, the recombination cooling, and probably Compton cooling, which can be important at high redshifts. So again, this red thing is quite uncertain, along with the other two. The third thing, what we need is the evolution of the ionization fraction. And that will be, in simplest cases, will be given by the balance of photoionization and the recombination rates. So, if we try to solve, these three equations together, as I said, we are stuck with these three things which are in red, the source term, the clumping factor, and what is the photoionization background. But of course, one can probably relate the photoionization with the source term. If you know the sources of photons, you might be able to get an idea of what the photoionization rate might be. It is partly true, except that you have to know the kind of mean free path of photons to calculate the ionizing flux, which goes into the photoionization and photoheating rate equations. So, even after all these things, we are stuck with this mean free path, clumping factor, and the source term. Source term, we have no choice. We have to model it, depending on what your preference is and what kind of models you need. And we will try to see, there is a formalism which incorporates the inhomogeneities in the IGM, which can actually take into account, in an approximate sense, the mean free path and the clumping factor, both. So before going to the mathematical details of the model, I just want to show a schematic diagram of how the reionization must have proceeded. So this is just a sketch. It's not a numerical simulation or anything. So this is a kind of, you can imagine some kind of a random density distribution, with the darker regions being the high density regions. And I just put, there can be some sources of ionizing photons in these high density regions. And these high density regions, these photons will first ionize the halo, the high density halo where they are in. And not all of them can escape into the IGM. So this is as if the halo has been ionized, and there is a kind of, some fraction of them have emerged into the IGM. So I have to subtract these photons while treating the IGM, basically, which we take into account by some escape fraction. And then we see the ionized regions expand. Now here the thing is, it's seen that the ionized regions expand preferentially along the low density regions, while the high density region seems to remain kind of neutral. So by yellow, I denote the ionized volume in some sense. And they keep on expanding, and this is what we call the pre-overlap era, where the ionized bubbles haven't overlapped yet. And we are approaching reionization. And at some point, the bubbles overlap. So in some sense, the filling factor of the low-density ionized regions is 1. However, you can see this, the high-density regions will still remain neutral, and which will probably manifest themselves at Lyman limit systems. And the photon mean free path at these stages will be given by T typical separations between these high density regions. And after that, this is the post-overlap era. So what happens is these ionized regions just they gradually get more and these high density regions they gradually get more and more ionized. And so basically the typical separation between the Lyman limit systems also increases. So this is the rough picture of the reionization, and it will be very useful if we can incorporate at least some of it into some sort of analytical framework. So to do this, we'll see. So the easiest thing is to model the post-overlap era. So in the post-overlap era, what's happening is we know that the low density regions are ionized, already ionized, and as we go along, the high density regions are getting gradually more and more ionized. So we can use an equation like this to describe this era, where this Fm delta denotes the mass fraction below a density delta, basically. So what is happening is, as we are increasing more and more high density regions, more and more mass is getting ionized. So this Fm is increasing, as with delta H. And that increase is determined by the ionizing sources and the recombination term. Now note, in the recombination term, this R now denotes the clumping factor. So if we know the density distribution of the IgM, we can actually calculate the clumping factor through this equation. This is the probability distribution function of the IgM density, and you have to weight it by delta square. And you have to also remember that while calculating the clumping factor, we are actually talking about clumping factor of the ionized regions. So you should only include those regions which are ionized. So the upper limit of the integration is given by this delta H. Now things are slightly more complicated in the pre-overlap era, where the bubbles haven't overlapped. During this era, what happens is the high density regions are neutral, low density regions are ionized fine, but not all the low density regions are ionized because the bubbles haven't overlapped, kind of. So you have to incorporate some sort of a filling factor which gives the ionized fraction of the low density regions. So it will be described by an equation like this, where I have put a filling factor. So the filling factor gives the fraction of the low density regions which are ionized. So according to this picture, what happens is at a given time, the high density regions are neutral. By high density regions, I mean the regions which have density greater than some critical density. And the regions which are less dense, the density is below this critical value, among those regions, only a fraction Q is ionized. So this is the kind of picture which we are trying to incorporate. And it is given by this equation. When Q becomes 1, what happens is all the regions below this delta critical is ionized, and all the regions above this delta critical is neutral. So according to this picture, the reionization is defined as when Q is equal to 1. It's somewhat idealized because it will depend on the nature of the sources and how they are distributed in the universe and all. But as we'll see, even this idealist picture, can give us some ideas about how the reionization occurs. Sorry, which one?
Is that fraction accounted for on the right as well?
Okay, we are saying why isn't there a FM here?
Oh, no, there's a Q on the right. Okay, I understand.
Okay, and if we believe that we have taken into care the clumping factor, the other thing we have to take into account is the mean free path. And again, we will use a simplistic prescription given by Miralles, Kudé, Hanelt, and Rees, where the mean free path, you can actually determine it by the fraction of ionized volume. Basically, the mean free path before reionization is determined by the sizes of the bubbles, sizes of the H2 regions. And after that, it is determined by the typical separation between these high density neutral peaks, which are the Lyman limit systems. So again, here we will use some sort of, so in both cases, you can imagine that it is, I mean, we can determine it if we know the how much fraction of the volume is ionized. And we'll use somewhat idealized way of determining that mean free path. So, given these two equations, we can now start determining, I mean, how the reionization proceeded. Here I have included the equations only for hydrogen, H2 regions. You can include a similar thing from for helium-3, doubly ionized helium regions. And then, I mean, you can treat the universe as a kind of multiphase medium. There is a neutral part. There is a part where only hydrogen is ionized, but helium is in a helium-2 form. It's still singly ionized. And there's a third region where hydrogen is ionized, where helium is also doubly ionized. So we call them as helium-3 regions. And their relative volumes are given by these factors, basically, a QH2 for hydrogen and a similar thing for helium. So let me just try to describe the features of the model. So we try to solve simultaneously the evolution of the ionized regions as well as the thermal history in this multiphase medium. And as I said, we follow the evolution of the three regions coupled, and as the regions evolve, the equations of temperature and ionization fraction is solved accordingly. We incorporate the inhomogeneous IgM density distribution, which is crucial for calculating the clumping factor and the mean free path, through the log normal model. This log normal model is found to be a good approximation for the low density IgM at redshifts below 6. So we are just extending these approximations to higher redshifts also. We include three sources of ionizing radiation. First, the population 3 stars, which seem to explain the excess in the near infrared background radiation observations. So they are effective at early redshifts. These population 3 are highly massive, and they are nearly zero metallicity stars. Of course, we have to include the population 2, the normal usual stars. And you have to know at, the precise redshift at which the universe, there was a transition from the population 3 stars to the usual stars. And again, from these near infrared background studies, the transition redshift seems to be fixed around 9, 10 or so. And to get the star formation rate, we use a kind of Preschecter formalism to calculate the formation and merger rates of dark matter halos. And then within each halo, we prescribe a star formation rate, which is spread around the dynamical time scale of the halo, and it decreases exponentially thereafter. And then you have to include the quasars, which are definitely significant at low redshifts. So we use a model which is based on the empirical circular velocity and empirical correlation between circular velocity and mass of the black hole. It's a phenomenological simple model, but seems to work. And if you don't want to use the model, you can use the observed luminosity function of quasars at low redshifts. It will give the same results anyway. Finally, we also incorporate the radiative feedback, which suppresses cooling and star formation in low mass halos. So what happens is when we are doing this press sector mass function, we have to put a lower limit of mass in those mass functions. So in neutral regions, we set this lower limit, assuming that molecular cooling is effective at low mass halos. We'll see what the effect of, what the effect of varying this parameter is later, when I present the results. But in the ionized regions, the lower limit is set by the photoionization temperature. So this is much higher than in neutral regions. So what happens is as the universe gets ionized and heated up, the low mass halos, the star formation in low mass halos gets suppressed. And that in some sense takes into account the effect of photo evaporation and all other photo heating, through this factor. And we'll see what effect does that have in the reionization histories. What are the free parameters? Of course, the star forming efficiencies. By that, what I mean is what fraction of baryons goes into stars. That will enter into my prescription of star formation rate. And then we don't know the escape fractions for population 2 and population 3 stars, meaning what fraction of the photons produced by these population of stars do actually escape into the IGM. But what happens in most cases, a combination of this star forming efficiency and escape fraction enter into the picture. So you can treat it as a single parameter kind of stuff. And then, as I said, we have to know the transition redshift. So we have to know when to switch off the population 3 stars and start the usual stars. So that is also something which can be a potentially free parameter in the model. So to start with, let us try a model with some fiducial values of the parameters. So for example, we take a very low, 0.5% efficient star forming efficiency for population 3 stars. This is again somewhat fixed by the near-infrared background studies. For population 3 stars, we use a kind of very high escape fraction, assuming that most of the photons produced will actually escape into the IGM, which is shown by different simulations of high redshift stars. The star forming efficiency for population 2 stars is around 10%, which can be somewhat fixed if you if you compare the star formation rate with low redshift observations. The escape fraction for population 2 stars, photons from population 2 stars, is quite uncertain. It can be a few percent to 10%, or maybe more, maybe less. Okay, we take it to be 2%. I will discuss the variation of the parameters later on. This is just to set up some initial fiducial model kind of stuff. And again, the transition redshift, we fix it to be around 10. So what do we get for the reionization history? So here I am plotting the volume filling factor both for hydrogen and doubly ionized helium. So hydrogen is red and this is blue. Plotting is against redshifts. So you can see from the red curve that we get a hydrogen reionization, which is induced by population 3 stars, of course, at around redshifts of around 14 or so. Initially, the helium-3 regions closely follow the hydrogen H2 regions, basically because the population 3 stars have quite a hard spectrum. But the moment we see the hydrogen is ionized, or the filling factor is getting ionized more, there is a suppression in the growth of helium-3 filling factors. This is because of the feedback effect. The moment you have more ionized regions, what happens is so photons from the low mass halos get suppressed, and that suppresses the helium evolution of the helium filling factor. Helium eventually completes the reionization at around 10 or so, 10 or 11. Now at some point, just after redshifts of 10, what happens is the population 3 stars cease to exist and we turn into population 2 stars. Helium suffers a kind of instant recombination during those epochs because, as I said, the population 3 stars have quite high hard spectrum and they supply lots of helium ionizing photons, and suddenly you find that no such photons are available. Population 2 stars, which are here, I mean, they don't supply enough helium ionizing photons. So the helium has to wait till the quasars come up around these redshifts. I mean, quasars become dominant, and then there is a second helium reionization at around redshifts of 3 or 4 also. Okay, the lower limit of this thing is 2 actually. We don't go to 0. I will explain why. Okay, this thing is very well seen when we consider the star formation rate. So I have plotted the population 3 and the population 2 star formation rates. And as you can see, the population 3 at some point, we shut up the population 3. Of course, it is not instantaneous because, as I said, the star formation rate, I mean, it decreases exponentially. It's not an instantaneous decrease. And this is where the population 2 stars come up. And we have chosen the efficiency factor for star formation to match low redshift observations. Yeah, sure. This one? Okay, yeah. This one basically, yeah, okay. It's again a kind of feedback effect, basically, as this is the time when more and more regions are getting ionized, and we have suppression in the low mass halos, basically. So, because the initial star formation, I mean, comes mainly from low mass halos. So anything bad you do to the low mass halos will affect drastically in the star formation rates. Yeah. This is okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So for the neutral regions, we are assuming that the molecular cooling is very effective. So we go to halos having virial temperatures of 300 Kelvin or so. But in the ionized regions, we determine the low mass of the halos through the photoionized temperature, which is above 10 to the power 4 Kelvin. So in the ionized regions, all the halos from this 300 Kelvin to some 10 to the power 4 Kelvin stop forming stars. And so the moment you have some sort of ionization, you see a drop in the star formation rate or the photon production rate. Yeah, in the neutral regions. So, but as more and more, I mean, there is a kind of competition going on, of course. As you ionized, So, for instance, suppose I don't include photo heating in my thing, hydrogen will get ionized much earlier. I mean, it delays to 14 in some sense. Okay. If you don't include small mass, okay, I will come to that later. You can get similar things when we include, when you see the graphs for photoionization rate for H1 and helium 2 also. So the thing is, as I said, the helium suffers a recombination when there is a transition from population 3 to population 2, but nothing of that sort happens to hydrogen. So this is because, there is a drop in the, for instance, the ionization rate. But it is more drastic for helium. That's simply because the population 2 stars, don't give enough helium ionizing photons, which is clear from these two figures. I mean, this drop is probably a factor of 10. This is much more for helium. Yeah, okay, that will depend on the POP2 stars ionizing, escape fraction. So this is 2% for the moment. If you assume 2%, it is, contribute equally. Yeah. Okay. Now, the volume filling factor doesn't give you much information after reionization. It's one after that. So to understand what happens after the universe has reionized, which is the post-overlap phase, you have to turn into the density. So this, by delta I mean, this is the density above which everything is neutral, below which everything is ionized in the post-overlap phase. So as you can see, as Q becomes one, after that there is a rise in this delta I. So this means that more and more high density regions are being ionized. And I have plotted both for hydrogen and helium. Of course, since hydrogen ionizes early, it penetrates into high density regions much earlier.
Why did you choose a minimum value of 60, I guess, or 50?
Okay, so this is, yeah, what is that? Yeah. So this is the thing, as I said, I mean, in the pre-overlap phase, what happens is there is a density above which everything is neutral, but below which, only a factor Q is ionized. Okay, so this is that critical value. I mean, there is no prescription for choosing that, except that we know that it should be of the order of halo, typical halo densities, basically, which will remain neutral even when the bubbles are overlapped, kind of. So for the moment, we have chosen 60, which is a kind of a halo density at a virial radius. I mean, it will vary depending on the profile and so. But the interesting thing is most of the results don't vary. I mean, don't vary much if we keep this initial delta I, between 10 and 100. I mean, it's quite insensitive to this parameter. But of course, this thing is more interesting when in the post-overlap phase, when it starts increasing. Similarly for the clumping factor. So the thing is, it is given by this value of delta I. So you should consider only those regions which are ionized, which are below this density threshold. And as you can see, when the universe is reionized, which is along this point, the value of the clumping factor is quite low. This is because to reionize the universe, we actually need to reionize the regions which are preferably low density regions. So it is of the order of few. And then it increases, of course, when the high density regions are getting ionized more. Yeah, sure. Yes, yes, yes. So the high density regions which are ionized is not counted.
Yeah.
You mean the halos from where it is coming out.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, 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 exactly. It will be around 100 or so.
Right.
Yeah. This is because you count the halos where the sources are, right, while calculating the clumping factor. So in our case, those halos are kind of subtracted out from the picture. So only those which has escaped are counted only. Yeah. And finally, I plot the proper mean free path for different species. As you see, during the pre-overlap phases, it increases due to increase of the H2 regions. As they overlap, the increase is quite drastic. I mean, they start increasing much earlier because more and more regions are exposed to more than one ionizing sources. At this point, there's a decrease because of this transition. I mean, you can see the decrease everywhere from the transition from population 3 to population 2 stars. And after that, again, it increases. Okay. Yeah. I will. Okay. And again, as I said, I also plotted the neutral fraction of hydrogen to see the effect of this transition. What happens is you can't see any effect in hydrogen here. I mean, because the overlapping bubbles don't separate. I mean, this is all what is telling you. But the neutral fraction varies. Actually, the neutral fraction increases because there is a decrease in the ionizing flux. So this is around redshift of 6, and I don't know what that really implies for the Gunn-Peterson tau we see at redshift, above redshift 6 quasar, and we are still studying this. Okay, now I go into the how the model compares with observations. Of course, the mean free path at low redshifts determines, okay, is determined by the abundance of Lyman limit systems. And you can see, I mean, there is a rough match with the available data, although I feel it evolves slightly faster than the mean value, but it is still within one sigma limits. Next, Gunn-Peterson optical depth as observed in the absorption systems. So, okay, this I calculate it, I mean, using very simple, I mean, using the log normal probability distribution function. But you should realize that these things, I mean, can be very approximate. I mean, in the sense we don't include any void profile effects or velocity effects or resolution effects and so on. But okay, the rough match seems to be okay. I mean, this is the effective optical depth versus redshift plotted for difference values of the adiabatic index of the IGM. So gamma is the slope, I mean, measures the slope of the temperature density relation. Gamma equal to 1 means the IGM is isothermal. And also we can see, I mean, there seems to be a transition of gamma as we move along redshifts. But these things need to be confirmed very well using line of sight simulations using all the effects. Sorry, yeah.
May I ask you just a question? Why the curve don't follow the temperature? I mean,
follow the.
If there is linear organization, I could observe the organization.
Yeah.
Why do you still have a smooth curve there? Doesn't it feel the change of the temperature?
Yeah, okay, I think there is a compensation between the gamma, the ionizing flux, and the temperature. I mean, there's a compensating effect going on. Yeah. And one related observation is the observation of temperatures at low redshift regions. And what you can see is the observed temperature is consistent with the H2 regions. At redshifts below 3.5, it is consistent with helium regions at redshifts below 3.5. So there seems to be a transition here. However, given our reionization history, this is the global temperature. I mean, it doesn't seem to follow the data points. So we don't know whether this is an effect due to your sampling just a single line of sight where the helium reionization occurred at this redshift. So probably with more lines of sight, I mean, we expect a much smoother jump here compared to the what the data implies. But also you should remember that this T naught is derived from the observations of flux. So in principle, if we can measure the observation of transmitted flux, I mean, that should be okay. And finally, the electron scattering optical depth as observed from WMAP data, and this seems to match well. I mean, that is because the fiducial parameter I chose for this population 3 stars are meant to match these values, which in turn matches the near infrared background data quite well. And the other possible variations, you can actually fix the star formation efficiency for population 3 stars from WMAP data within this range. I mean, none of the scenarios, I mean, qualitatively change if as long as we are within this range. Similarly, I can fix the escape fraction, I can fix the upper limit of the escape fraction from Gunn-Peterson optical depth at these redshifts. We have tried different feedback models. So, for instance, if you put a higher feedback, more severe feedback at high redshifts, we find that it suppresses the growth of helium reionization, basically, but doesn't have much effect in hydrogen. Okay, if we have reduced power in small scale, so you neglect all the halos which have virial temperature below 10 to the power 4K, I mean, this is to answer your question. First, we require a higher value of star forming efficiency to match the WMAP data. Once you do that, I mean it's again back to I mean the same thing, except that the effect of the feedback is less severe because you have cut off the low mass halos before the ionization. So just to summarize, we, according to our model, we fired the hydrogen reionization at very high red shifts. The helium 2 reionization, I mean there is a double peak there. Observation of temperature, we find it to be consistent with hydrogen regions at redshifts greater than 3.5 and with helium regions at lower redshifts. And we find that if you see the star formation rate curve, we find that the amount of POP3 stars needed to match the WMAP data and ionize the universe is just about 0.2% of the total stars till redshift of 2. And future, we are trying to look into the Gunn-Peterson optical depths around redshift of 6 using line of sight realizations of the log normal model. And we would like to study implications on CMB polarization and 21 centimeter observations if there are any. And I don't know, but probably if we can incorporate the some sort of IGM metallicity evolution into the code, I mean, that would be also very interesting. Thank you. Okay.
So in your picture, the whole Gunn-Peterson shock is coming from like 100 times overdense regions or something like that?
The Gunn-Peterson?
From that delta stuff.
Okay, that doesn't affect the Gunn-Peterson optical depth. I mean, okay, Gunn-Peterson optical depth, when I calculate, I integrate over the probability density function, right?
Yeah.
And
so where is most the error coming from?
It's actually coming from low density regions, below 10, because that P delta is, I mean, falls down drastically at higher density things. Yeah.
Okay.
So actually, they don't contribute in the Gunn-Peterson optical depth, no.
So it's about the scale for population data. So 100%, you mentioned the reference of Wallen.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do it for the 10 to the 6 dark matter halo.
Okay.
There are other worlds that do the study with different mass halo and different efficiency, and they find the escape goes to zero very quickly to increase the mass of the halo. So actually, with your efficiency of POP3 star formation, it was
0.5%. So 10 to the minus 3, yeah.
I mean, if you assume it, spherical geometry, you can simply calculate how many photons you need to keep the whole
here. I'm not sure you have to. Is it? Okay, I mean, that is the idea I got from the paper. I mean, the idea is that, I mean, first few stars is enough to ionize the whole halo, I mean.
Well, it depends on how much of the gas you can manage to start, right? I mean, if you convert only a little bit of it, you have to escape of zero.
I think the real escape of it would be one single star.
Yeah.
So,
If you assume a small efficiency of POP3 star formation, then the escape should be more, right?
Yeah, okay.
That's what I
mean. Yeah.
Well, the spherical geometry to get the idea, right?
As far as this thing is concerned, as I said, a combination appears. So actually, you can still play around with. So you decrease F escape and increase the efficiency a bit. I mean, you still seems to get the similar results. So
then you believe that the small mass galaxies that will get. So they are now suppressed by the possibility of getting better.
No, okay. Even if you, okay, as I said, even if you decrease the photo, I mean, suppose you neglect all halos which are below 10 to the power 4K virial temperature. So there is no, I'm not concerned about H2 cooling at all. So of course, for that I need a slightly higher value of epsilon star formation efficiency, but I can still match the WMAP results with that. So, yeah.